Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday night at 8 o'clock, and that means the latest episode of Graphic Policy Radio, where politics and the multiverses meet. I'm your host, Brett, and it's just me tonight. I'm flying solo. God help us all. So bear with me while I just rant on for quite a while. Tonight, I think we're going to cover... want to talk about a little bit about last week, our discussion with writer Ron Mars, and my own personal opinion of the DC issue. Some great comics that have come out that have probably been overlooked by everybody. And then talk about the distribution system that's going on. There's been some interesting news that has popped up in the last week. But first I want to talk about DC Comics women, their portrayal and the outcry that's been going on for the last few weeks. Last week we had writer Ron Mars on, who I consider a friend. Ron's been in the business for 30-something years. So it was a very interesting discussion, very eye-opening to hear his opinion as to what was going on and what he thought about the controversy and the depiction of minorities in the comic books. First off, definitely the comic book industry's got something, has a ways to go. It's an industry dominated by white men. Most of the characters are white as well. So there's a long way to go before it really kind of reflects the world that we live in. But the outcry really kind of stems from a couple things that have happened lately. There is an issue with DC's latest revamp of the depiction of Catwoman. In the first issue, the first page was really shot at her chest the entire single time. And also with Red Hood and the Outlaws and his depiction of Starfire, who was really kind of shown off as an object. So a lot of discussion has been that it was too much sex for comic books, depicted women in a horrible light, and that the issue is that they were written by men. I don't disagree that the comic books had a lot to be desired, but it wasn't the depiction of sex that really bothered me. As I think I tried to bring up last week's discussion, it was really the fact that there were two characters that had no depth. In reality, if you want men and women to be depicted equally and on the same level, then the idea of sex and women going out and having sex shouldn't be that big of a deal. If men can do it, women can do it. But the fact is, that's all that was there for these two characters. Red Hood and the Outlaws was even more egregious in that the character was taken out as a weapon to blow up tanks, and then she was slept with. That was it. It really was a throwback to the 90s when all it was action and comic books with very little character. And that's my issue with those two comics, is that it was really the worst of the 90s. All action, no depth, art that was really kind of over the top, focused on the wrong things. And that was that. A lot of the discussion that's come afterwards has either claimed conspiracy by DC that they wanted to go for the male demographic, and I think as Ron kind of talked to us last week and shed some light on, that could be further from the truth. He didn't have any discussions when it came about the subject. He wasn't even told who his audience was when he wrote Voodoo. So there goes conspiracy. The next is there's quite a few people that say it's men writing that's the issue. Well, that's where I actually have the biggest problems with the argument on the other side. Men can write women. Greg Rucka does an amazing job writing women. You have J.H. Williams, who's writing Batwoman. Two fantastic writers who show fully realized female characters are doing quite a job. It's not that men are the issue. In fact, saying that men are the issue is the exact claim that you're making against that men are the issue. You are being sexist towards men, saying they can't do something themselves. Really, what stands is that writers definitely need to be diversified. With more minorities, more women writing for comic books, you're going to have a broader viewpoint, and more people will be bringing out their opinions and showing their experiences. And that's really where the comic book industry stands. It has an ability to reflect upon the world as is. Right now, somewhat does that, somewhat doesn't. With more people, more voices, more diversified voices, hopefully we'll be seeing more creative writing. And I think that's where DC fell apart, is it wasn't the depiction of sex. It was the fact that this was very one-note characters, that there was no character really there. It was just a drawing, and the post that I was going to write, but I've decided to just instead rant on this radio show since I have it to myself. I want to say that conflicts is might be a 2D image, but it really needs 3D characters. And the follow-up to that is Comic Vine actually wrote an article this week, Sarah Lima, that says, "Do politics in comics alienate readers?" As a site that dedicated to kind of looking at politics in comic books, the answer, as I can absolutely tell you, is no, it doesn't. What's interesting is the Comic Vine article said the last time politics was in comics was during the Tea Party debacle with Marvel in Captain America, where they had some rally posters, and one said, "Teabag the libs before they teabag you." The Tea Party decided to raise a stink about it, and then Marvel decided to back down, showing that they don't stand for free speech and can be intimidated and bullied. But in reality, politics are there every single week in comic books. And it's really came to light, and we think about it, as I'm catching up with IDW Publishing. We've recently started getting review copies of their series, and I've been trying to catch up on Transformers. Read the first two trade paperbacks. Both were fantastic. The second one was very interesting in that it really was about the destabilization of the world when you introduce giant killer robots and the global scale. But reading through these individual issues, I took a pause at issue 22 and 23. Issue 22 and 23 was fully about politics. That's all there was. It was bouncing between the present and the past, the present being Megatron's finally given up and surrendered to Optimus Prime. And the two issues just bounce back and forth in the debate between these two characters and their philosophies. And what we find out is Megatron really was a nonviolent political activist who wrote a political treatise and wound up getting into a bar fight and wound up getting beat up on by the cops and claimed conspiracy within the Senate. So you have two very interesting characters, both wanting to liberate their oppressive people, one then wanting to subjugate them under tyrannical force, and then the other one wanting to bring true democracy to this world. And there's two issues that the writing is absolutely amazing, beyond fantastic, to a level that my jaw dropped. I was not expecting this at all. I mean, in Transformers, it's been entertaining, but to see this writing anywhere is just few and far between, especially when you get into the political philosophy. A lot of the two issues is really just a debate between these two guys, back and forth about their philosophies, about what they want to achieve. And to me, it's just beyond fantastic. Very, very political. And there was no really noise about these two issues at all. They just kind of flew under the radar. People probably reviewed them. But these are two very heavy political comic books that have come out within the last few months, within the last 5 months. Issue, I believe, 27 came out last week. So, in fact, politics really is just ingrained in the political comic book arena. And you had Holy Terror that came out, I believe, 2 weeks ago, might have been last week, that was written by Frank Miller. And really what it is a revenge fantasy about Al-Qaeda, originally written for Batman. But he's kind of reworked it to just be a straight-up revenge fantasy. It's not very good, but there's a lot of racist elements, very political, very kind of a rambling, much like I'm sure this episode of radio show is. And you know what? It sold very well. It's one of the top trade paperback sellers of the week. It did very, very good. But on top of that, I mean, you've got this article of Comic Vine questioning whether or not politics is good for comic books. You've got the outcry of over DC Comics and their depiction of women. And what actually upset me over this past week, and if you follow us on Twitter, Twitter handles Graphic Policy, please follow us. What's really interesting to me was what flew under the radar. You had two comic books. You had one, Rachel Rising. It was the second issue that came out by Terry Moore. And then you had Kick-Ass, Kick-Ass 2, which was issue number 4 by Mark Millar. Both weren't about really the sex so much as the violence. And both these flew under the radar with no outcry at all. And it was very, very interesting to me. So Rachel Rising is kind of a zombie comic, kind of getting into the mix of things, don't exactly what's know what's going on. But the end of it, and I hate, if you don't want spoilers, I'd probably tune out right now. But the end of it involved a little girl suffocating her sister with saran wrap after hitting her with a frying pan. It's a very disturbing scene, one, because of the fact that it very much could happen. It isn't like a big giant gun blowing up some person and shooting him in the chest. It was a simple use of a frying pan and saran wrap, which most homes probably have in there. The fact is also the perpetrator was a very small girl. And Kick-Ass 2, actually, I think was the most egregious of it. Because not only did it show sex, it showed beyond violence. And the scene that I'm talking about is Kick-Ass 2 is the follow-up to the fairly popular series that came out over a few years ago and became a movie, which I wasn't the biggest fan of. But the second volume of the series, which is being written with another movie in mind, basically follows the fallout of having all these heroes walking around the city. Red Mist, who is now calling himself the Motherfucker, has decided to band a group of villains together and just cause problems. And in this fourth issue, he decides to take the fight to Kick-Ass's quote-unquote girlfriend and attack her in her home. So it starts off with them murdering a bunch of kids in the street. And this isn't even a point to this. I mean, he just pulls out a gun and starts shooting little children. Next, he breaks into the house, kills her parents. And then this girl's probably late teens, but she's definitely in high school, winds up raping her and brutalizing her, him and his band of villains. And this goes on for probably 2, 3, 4 pages in the comic book. It's just one violence, but violence to a teenager and the rape of a teenager. And there was very, very little outcry over it all. The fact there was so little outcry actually kind of pissed me off. For all the people who were complaining about the depiction of women in Red Hood and the Outlaws, for the fact that the first page of Catwoman was all boobs, most were silent. The vast majority were silent. The fact that I only received one Twitter post pointing me out to a post by Multiversity on the subject. And even Laura, one of the retailers, Acme Comics, said, when it came to the violence, it kind of caught him off guard. But really, my question is, where's the outcry and where's the line? I'm not one for censorship. In fact, I think everyone has a right to say whatever they want. It doesn't have to be my cup of tea. Then again, I have a right to criticize it as well. Where is there a line? Is there a point that writers and artists need to stop and say, whoa, what are we doing? My argument is no. As over the top as Kick-Ass was, as over the top Catwoman was, as over the top Red Hood was, fact is it's all upon the consumer. These comics sold. Kick-Ass 2 sold. It might have not sold well enough, and a lot of people probably didn't read it, which is probably why there wasn't much of an outcry, but Catwoman sold, Red Hood sold. If you don't like these comics, don't read them. It's really that simple. I remember the outcry over Howard Stern and people saying this guy is disgusting, this guy is horrible. The more outrageous stuff he did, the better he did in the ratings. But there was something that all those people who complained about him, who bitched about him, who moaned about him, they forgot. There was a dial on the radio. No one put a gun to their head and said, listen to this radio show. Just like no one is putting a gun ahead to the comic book reader saying, you need to pick up a copy of this. If it's not your thing, don't read it. don't purchase it. It really is that simple. And comics are at a point where these sales are so low, a mass boycott would get noticed. And that's fine. And a lot of people argue, say, well, these are characters I love. That's great. They might be characters you love, but they're not characters your own. You're not the ones writing it. The writers are trying to tell a story they want to tell. You have a right to complain about it. You have a right to say, what the hell are you doing? But then again, you also have a right to not purchase it. If the writers were to fall into line and start writing for over the mass outcry, they're no longer doing their jobs. It's writing by committee. And at the end, their job is over. We might as well just have fanfic out there and some artist goes and draws it all. We might as well wiki storylines for the better, which would be an interesting concept if anyone wants to write it. But on top of all of this, there's so many good female writers out there. There's fantastic work being done, which seems to be not being discussed at all. There was actually good depictions of women during the DC relaunch that flew under the radar that no one wanted to praise. Wonder Woman was fantastic comic. Supergirl, I mean, people had issues with the costume. I don't think there's much difference between that and the singlet. But the story was pretty solid. Birds of Prey was a fairly solid comic. Wasn't my cup of tea, but it was a fairly good depiction of women. There was a lot of positive things out there, but no one wants to talk about that because controversy is what drives stories. That's what gets people coming to websites and coming to Twitter accounts and gets the money flowing for various websites. If people really cared about these issues, we started an athlete petition about Amanda Waller. It was called Waller, Not Smaller, that took DC to task over taking this character and basically putting her in Jenny Craig, and she was half the size that she was. There was no reason for this. There was nothing that this gained the story at all. It was just seemed like them wanting to get the character to look more like Angela Bassett, who played her in Green Lantern. But for all the outcry over that issue, the ACLI petition, last I checked, had only 20-something people that actually signed the petition and tweet DC. We put it out there for the people who wrote a lot of the blog posts originally. We told them that we were trying to organize this petition going on. They were silent. One, because I don't think they gained anything about it from it. And two is their hearts aren't really into it. They might bitch, they might moan, but when push comes to shove to actually do something positive, it's not as easy as throwing bombs and being negative. I mean, the fact is when I go to shows, one thing I love to do, and I'm going to be doing this at New York Comic Con, which comes up next week, is walk around Artist Alley. Artist Alley is a great time to find all the small print stuff that you will never find out in mass production. And I find the Artist Alley is filled with women. The question to DC always throughout was, where was the women writers? Where are the women artists? And I think a lot of people responded, but if you want to find where they are, go to Artist Alley at your local convention, New York Comic Con, San Diego Comic Con, Baltimore Comic Con, SPX. SPX was 43% women. They crowed about it, 43% women. It's amazing. And it's solid work. But that's not being trumpeted. Instead, people want to bitch about the mainstream comic books while overlooking this diverse and fantastic world of indie comics. I'd love to know what folks out there are thinking. The number is 619-768-2952. Call in. We can have a great discussion on this. But I think a goal of us going forward, at least our website, is to start really showing this off, showing the fantastic work indie artists are doing. People are covering DC. People are covering Marvel. Not enough people are covering the good work that Image is doing. It's a company I think that's hit and miss. IDW is actually doing some great stuff. Oni Press, Boom Studios, Dynamite Comics. All of them are putting out material that aren't getting in front of enough people, and they really should. I mean, those two Transformers comics, 22 and 23, were fantastic and are up there as two issues that can easily be some of the best of the year, two of the best things produced that I've read all year. He had codenamed Geronimo, which came out from IDW, that was about SEAL Team 6 and their work and their assault on Bin Laden. And it was a good piece of comic. It was a good read. It was entertaining. Wasn't as the greatest thing out there. I mean, there was a lot of other better graphic novels that have been done this year, but it was something that not enough people really talked about. Green River Killer, Dark Horse Comics. I keep on crowing about this series. It's fantastic. It's a true story that again, is in a graphic novel format that not enough people are reading, not enough people are really paying attention and checking out. So I think that a big focus of ours going forward is to really bring that up, to talk about it, to highlight the great small pressings that are going forward and extending our relationship with those great publishers. Archaea, we named as the best publisher of 2010, and for a reason. Their comics are fantastic. The work by Matt's on The Killer, his series Cyclops, is unbelievable, beyond fantastic, political down to its core. They've got such great series that they're doing work with Jim Henson. That's all ages. Mouse Guard, I would love to share with kids. Return of the Dapper Men got enormous praise, as it should. I mean, it's just a fantastic series. But not enough people are talking about them. They want to focus on the controversy that is DC Comics. They want to talk about how Marvel's faltering and how Marvel's going to respond to DC's relaunch. We're in a time when comic books have never been better. From web comics to what's printed, to what's being done self-publishing-wise, there's never been more choices from more different viewpoints, more genders, more minorities, more ethnicities, more religions than there are today. And going further is, we've got a great thing going on in Kickstarter. Kickstarter, last I checked, has raised about $1.2 million for successfully funded comic books. Kickstarter, for people who don't know, is a website where you basically solicit donations, solicit contributions to help fund your project. So a lot of comic book artists and writers have been going to this to get their comics published. So what you do is you chip in $5, $10, maybe $25, $50, whatever. And for each the amount that you give, you usually get something in return. As simple as maybe for $5 or $10, you get a PDF copy of the comic. Some of them are even for the $5 or $10, you get a printed copy of the comic. I myself have probably donated like $200-$300 over the year to various things. I've gotten quite a few of printed copies. There's one called Fracture that I received a couple of weeks ago. It was gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. One of the nicest bound things that I've seen in a long time. Various series, The Gathering, which is an anthology series, goes up there with each anthology. What we're able to do through something through Kickstarter is the fans decide what we want to see. No longer is it going to be editors deciding what the public wants. Kickstarter democratizes the comic book industry. For those people who get rejected by Image or IDW or Marvel or DC and want something to prove it, really believe in their project, they're able to go before the public and make their case. And if the public likes it, they'll give money. And if they give money, it gets published. We become the editors. We become the publishers and decide what we want to see, and we get to speak with our dollars. The average donation on Kickstarter is just under $50, which is an amazing thing considering people complain and bitch and moan by the fact that most comic books are in the whatever $3, $4, $5 range. Graphic novels are anywhere from $15 to $25 to $35 a piece. The average giving is just around $50 on Kickstarter, which shows that there is a audience out there who really will speak with their dollars, who will fund worthy projects, and will pay more for quality. There's an audience that's just not being really tapped into, and I think the publishers are starting to take notice. The smaller publishers are starting to take notice. I think it's going to be a while before you see DC or maybe Marvel hopping in and using it. But the crowdsourcing of money is going to become a much bigger force as the year goes on. And expect to see us cover a lot of it. But it's just such a great thing. See, this is what happens when I rant. I just kind of go off and totally forget what I had to say. But definitely want to hear what you have to say. You can call in at 619-768-2952. And we can discuss politics in comics. But yeah, so this article, Comic Vine, I mean, basically says, you know, is it worth it? Do people really want to hear this? I think it's not only that people want to hear this, they are hearing this, they are buying this, they do see this week in and week out. I mean, it goes back to the first comic books. The first comic strip was started in newspapers, I mean, at 1900. And it was done by some very well-known people. And they were political in nature. They talked about the class system. They really kind of reflected about the social and political structure of those days. So the first comics were of political nature. You could flash forward to Captain America. Captain America was created a year before before Pearl Harbor even happened, and was advocating the U.S. entry into the war, to World War II. That was a very political nature. And I think as a whole, the Marvel Universe has been a perfect example of things being political. Last week we saw the final split of the X-Men, with Wolverine and Cyclops kind of having it out in a long discussion about the future of the mutant race, a very political of nature, where Wolverine basically said, enough is enough, we're putting children in danger, we're forcing children to be warriors and fighters, I just don't want it anymore. Where Cyclops says, we're defending ourselves and trying to keep our race going, we're going to do what we need to do. Once again, a political discussion. Very, very interesting and very good. But people want to overlook that. They kind of instead want to discuss the interesting themes that are going on and the questions that series that are really reflecting. They want to focus on the fact that the first page of Catwoman was her boobs. Not saying it was good. I actually think Catwoman could have been done in a very different way that would have totally changed the series around, but it would have still been really entertaining and not as much controversy. And even then, there's like faux controversy over Mars is voodoo. A lot of people focus on the fact that voodoo took place in a strip club. Well, the fact is that happened in the Cold War. Spies, when it came to the Eastern Bloc, Soviets, were put into strip clubs and put into prostitution dens near military bases in hopes of getting secrets from our military, exactly what was depicted in voodoo. I mean, there was a violent act of her killing a guy, and no one said anything of that. Mars brought that up, and Mars was absolutely correct in that. Why wasn't there an outcry about that? Because violence seems to be okay. It's showing a woman in a bra. That's not as if we're not adult enough to handle it. I mean, it's interesting is that so many years, it's been 60 years since we've had these battles in the U.S. Senate with Dr. Wortham, with Seduction of Innocence, saying that comic books were the cause of juvenile delinquency. And we fought against that. As an industry, we fought against it. And the Comics Code Authority occurred, and they acquiesced and they censored, and EC Comics basically went under due to that. And it wasn't until this past year or two that the Comic Codes really finally was the death of it, that the last kind of remnants of it were shackled off. I mean, 60 years this was going on. But maybe what these sites are basically saying was Dr. Wortham was right, is that comic books really do influence the audience, that they will cause sexist acts of its readers towards women, that there is something wrong with this. And it's interesting that after 60 years, many are coming around to this, that we somehow need to be protected from what we read. When I think it's a lot easier than that. It's the fact of just don't buy it. Don't pick it up. don't give it your dollar bills. Skip over it. If a few thousand people stop buying a comic book, that's going to get noticed. If the buzz about the series suddenly dies online, that gets noticed. But the fact is, what the controversy did was get people interested in checking out what was going on. What was going on in Catwoman? What was going on in Red Hood? And I guarantee it sold more copies. It actually did the opposite of what it wanted to do. Instead of rising up and creating this mass boycott, it actually boosted sales and guaranteed that these series are going to kind of go unabated for probably a few more issues than they might have otherwise. It gained nothing in the end. It was a lot of, it was sound and fury signifying nothing. And what bothers me more is, months ago I had an issue with a retailer who was talking crap about Ultimate Spider-Man and talking crap about Batwing. Batwing came out, the first issue was fantastic. Ultimate Spider-Man I thought was actually really good as well. But he hadn't read either of these comics before going off about them. He wasn't willing to give them a chance, just like a lot of the commenters aren't willing to give a chance to Catwoman or Red Hood and see where it goes, or Voodoo and see where it goes. Instead, it's the one issue, or even before the issue's out, making comments. Tom Morello, who plays with Rage Against the Machine, has a comic book coming out next week called Orchid, being done by Dark Horse. And I've read the first issue, and it's not bad. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but it's not bad. It's entertaining. And part of what he's described the series is it involves a prostitute who basically becomes Spartacus. And the folks who commented said, you know, I'd like to see a comic series about prostitutes showing off the real world of prostitution without reading the comic. Well, I've read the comic. That comic has about as much to do with prostitution as Les Mis has to do with prostitution. It is a means to the end. It sets up the conflict going forward. It gets this main character from point A to point B in the first issue. And going forward, I don't think it's going to really fall upon the fact that she was a prostitute much. Just like Voodoo took place in the strip club in the first issue, it is clear the second issue is not taking place in the strip club anymore. That it was a one and done, away we go. And I don't think that first issue really could have been done with her working at a Denny's. It wouldn't have been the same. It wouldn't have worked. Something sure would have been very, very off. But to me, what's disturbing is before Orchid even comes out, there's people raising a stink. The fact that it involves a prostitute. Tying it in with DC saying this depiction of women is horrible. But then again, everyone was silent when he had the rape and brutal beating of a teenager in Kick-Ass. That's okay. But the fact that we're going to have another comic book that has a prostitute is a horrible thing. Before sight unseen, before it's even read. Talk about the merits of the story. Talk about the merits of the character. Are they fully realized 3D characters? Before condemning the series. If you don't like it, that's fine. If all she was a prostitute, fine. If all it depicted was violence towards women, fine. But that's not the story. The story is, it's interesting. It's more, I think, has more to do with Gladiator than anything else, of an idea of people getting caught up and then rising up against the oppressive majority. And even the beginning of the comic book kind of comes off as progressive in a way. It condemns corporations for destroying the planet. The comic takes place in the future of a world destroyed. So it does have some progressive leanings towards it, some left statements. But it's already being condemned. Sight unseen, sight unread, condemned. And to me, that's wrong. It's very short-sighted by individuals. Give the comic a chance before really condemning it. And make sure to read it before condemning it. And realize that these are only one issues. This isn't the full story. And see where it goes. But yeah, that's it. And I'd say be consistent. That would be the other thing I'd hope for people to be consistent. And actually, when there is a horrible thing, i.e. Kick-Ass 2, issue 4, speak up. Because when you speak up for one thing and don't speak up for another thing, I have issues and start using the words like hypocrites. But that's me. And that's my rant. So out of more positive things, so there's been some great comics coming out. Unfortunately, I haven't had tons of times to write tons of reviews, and hopefully I will be doing so in a couple over the couple weeks. But I wanted to kind of do a little something different, talk about what's coming up in the next week, going over the list of previews, what it's showing is being released next week, Wednesday, and really highlighting what I think is going to be kind of the solid books. And starting with that, we're just going to kind of go down the list. I think Dark Horse Comics is really an interesting one with Orchid Number 1, is what I just talked about with Tom Morello. The series is great. I mean, it's a dollar comic, so it's kind of hard to go wrong when all it does is cost you a dollar. It's basically kind of Gladiator with a prostitute as the main character in a dystopian, destroyed world. It's a good read. For a dollar, I'll say it's absolutely worth it. Worth checking out. We follow up Batgirl Number 2, DC Comics. Gail Simone, I think, did a solid job with the first issue. Other than the glossing over of Babs Gordon walking it again. American Vampire Survival of the Fittest Number 5 comes out, which has been a fantastic series. Scott Snyder has just been knocking out of the park with pretty much anything and everything he's been doing. Batwoman Number 2 comes out. The art alone makes it kind of a must-purchase. Just absolutely fantastic work, beautiful comic. Words don't even do it justice. We've got from IDW Publishing, I would say Ghostbusters is kind of worth a try. I was a bit mixed on the first issue. The second issue, I think, is much it's more entertaining. The art, I think, is where I kind of have a little bit of problems. But the overall, it's solid. It's a fun read for Ghostbuster fans, well worth picking up. The Cape. Feels like it's been a little while since the first issue came out. That first issue came out, my jaw dropped, and I said, holy shit. Absolutely amazing series, done by IDW Publishing. Joe Hill is writing it. He's done Lock and Key, which is another fantastic series. But The Cape is beyond amazing and should probably be in everyone's pull list. Easily could be up there as one of the best series of the year. It's a four-issue limited series. From Image Comics, Morning Glories, I think, has been entertaining. But really what sticks out for me is Pigs Number 2. Absolute must buy that first issue. If you didn't pick it up and say, holy shit, at the end of it, I don't know what's wrong with you. I mean, a perfect example of a political series being released. It has to deal with undercover sleeper cell Russian agents kind of doing their last mission in the U.S., The first issue had a hell of a ending. The second issue is really, really good. It's an ongoing series. Definitely worth the buy. Absolutely worth the buy. Beyond fantastic. Marvel, I'm kind of mixed on. There's a lot of series that seem to be okay. Uncanny X-Force has been going really solid. We're dealing with the kind of rise of new Apocalypse. And the X-Men series gets reshuffled. You've got X-Men Evolutions, which I have no idea what the hell that series is going to be, but X-Men Regenesis, which really follows the fallout of the X-Men schism and the two teams falling apart, and I think it's probably just going to give a rundown as to what we can expect going forward in the series. It's been good. Is not the best, but I think that overall the X series, X line of comics, really need to be shaken up, and it looks like this is going to kind of achieve that. From smaller publishers, let's see here. You've got from Boom, Dracula, Company of Monsters, the third trade paperback, some Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers, DuckTales, Elric the Balance of the Force. Hellraiser, Irredeemable. Irredeemable is a fantastic series that have been kind of flying under the radar. It's by Mark Waid. Happiness is a Warm Blanket, Charlie Brown. Graphic novel, Charlie Brown. First original stuff being done, I think, in years. Absolutely definite buy for fans of Charlie Brown. From some other publishers, you've got Jennifer Blood. I mean, a perfect example of a strong female character kicking ass. There's some sex to it, which has been mostly entertaining, and it's over the top. But again, no one seems to be making a stink of it, which I kind of shocked about. I've been entertained by it. And then you've got, let's see here, what else that's been kind of fun. Haunted City Number 1, which is being done by Aspen Comics, that I read this past week, it's really good. It kind of reminded me of a few other series that are out there. Epic by Image is fairly similar to it, but it's a fun read. It's entertaining. 350, I kind of would go back and forth, but I'll recommend it. Mega Man Number 6 by Archie Comics. I mean, that's a company that's kind of gone under the radar. Archie Comics has been, I'll say, the most progressive series out there. Sorry, let me tweet that up. I mean, the stuff they've been doing and the fact that they've done it in such a short period of time has been quite amazing. It's kind of come around from what I'd say a fairly conservative point of view, a very 1950s Pollyannish world, and has been updated. You've got a character of Kevin Keller. Through that character alone, that they have take it on modern-day issues like Don't Ask, Don't Tell, gay marriage, gays in the military, in a fairly realistic setting. It's Archie Comics, so everything's still a little Pollyannish, but the fact is they're addressing issues that no one else really seems to be talking about. We said it many months ago that I think Archie Comics has become one of the most politically relevant publishers out there. And it's pretty amazing the fact that they're doing this. And it's all, for the most part, flying under the radar that so few people are actually paying attention or bringing it up. It's fantastic to see, again, kind of blowing away Comic Vine's statement about politics in comic books, that there's a perfect example of people who are very accepting of it. Even more interesting is the fact that Archie did get a lot of flack over the fact that they were doing this. A lot of people were unhappy with the company for taking their fairly beloved characters and putting some more diversity towards it. And whoever's doing all this, I have to applaud and say congrats. It's been some great work, and really looking forward to it. And along with the political stuff, they've got a lot of family stuff. Like their Mega Man and Sonic is perfect for all ages, parents to share with their kids. The Mega Man I've been loving has a great feel of like the comic book series that's been going on in the past. Well worth the read. I wish I could remember what the hell I've read recently that's been so solid. But again, the work that's going on right now in the comic book industry is beyond fantastic. I just wish the discussion online, discussion at conventions, was over this positivity. I'm fully expecting at New York Comic Con next weekend for DC Comics to get their ass ripped apart from unhappy fans at their panel. And you better believe I'm going to be sitting there watching that. And I will be the first to defend them in that. For as much crap and steps back they've taken with some of these characters, there's more that they've taken steps forward. And that's not being talked about, and that's not being covered. And it really is as simple as, if you don't like it, don't buy it. It's not to say that DC shouldn't be criticized. I think they should be criticized for the balls being dropped as far as what they could have done to build their audience. But that's not what's being discussed. What's being discussed is the content, not what could have been. To me, there's probably one or two series I wouldn't have done. Instead, I would have done Gotham Central with Renee Montoya written. I think that would have played so much better to a broad audience that it really could have brought in a lot of new comic book readers, especially for fans of things like Law and Order. Nor Comics, a perfect example, is I handed my father Jew Gangster, which is done by Joe Kubert. And he emailed me within a day or two and said, I absolutely love this. What else is there to read? And that's a person who's, vaguely has read comics in the past, but didn't know these type of comics that existed. You better believe I'm pointing him towards The Vertigo Crime, that I'm having him check out Geronimo, that there's so much out there that's just fantastic, especially in the noir sense, that he would love. Queen and Country is another perfect example of a series that he would kill to read and absolutely love. Northlander, Scalped, all that stuff is just fantastic work. That's being overlooked. That's not what's being discussed. We talk about that stuff during awards, but we don't discuss it week to week, and that needs to happen more. And I've been guilty about it. I've been focused on Marvel and DC because, unfortunately, that's what brings the traffic. But you know what? I don't care about the traffic. I'm not in this for money. I'm in this for the fun of it and the love of the comic books. So going forth, yeah, we're going to be covering DC, and I'm going to be posting up their reviews. Marvel will be posting up their press releases and doing reviews as well. But expect to see coverage of the indies, interviews with indie artists, indie publishers, individual reviews of the smaller publishers, Boom Studios, IDW, Dynamite. All of them are going to get spotlight and focus on because they deserve that. They've been putting out more and more quality every single week, while the top two basically have been floating along and not challenging the market at all. The smaller publishers are where it's at. They're the ones that are really driving what the future is going to be. Kickstarter, Libre Bistro, which is a new distribution company, all of them is where things are going. Plus, on top of that, what's occurring on the web. There's a whole area of comic books, of cartooning, that's not being discussed by our sites because I don't have time, but it needs to be focused on. And the work being done day in and day out on web comics is absolutely amazing and beyond fantastic. And all those people deserve way more credit than they get. And it's been really, really good. It's been interesting. Let's see here. We have a comment of Archie's been pushing new boundaries for a while. Look at the Mega Style Teenage, which they did. Style isn't what I'm talking about. I really think it's more of the storytelling of what was going on. That the fact that they were taking progressive issues, they've overleaped, I think, of the main two as to what's going on, and really reflecting the real world. And the thought here was DC did exactly what the industry needed. Yes and no. While it's great to see DC shake up everything and do quite well, my issue with it is the fact is the industry needs news makers and people to drive sales, not around gimmicks, not around number ones, not around the death of a character. It needs to be able to drive sales based off of solid storytelling. I forgot which industry vet said that, but his comment was he wished that we could see the news and the type of coverage over the day-to-day stories that we see. The death of the Human Torch in Fantastic Four was such a stunt. It might have brought people to the comic book stores, but the fact is, why can't we do that day to day? Why can't you get the coverage in USA Today without really doing some massive gimmick? Why can't you get mainstream media talking about solid storytelling? Archie Comics should be getting coverage over what it's doing with Kevin Keller. It's someone is. They just did a fantastic thing where they're raising money for, I think, a McDonald's house with the entire proceeds of one of the issues going towards charity and cancer research. That's fantastic, and that's getting coverage without being gimmicky, without doing number ones. My issue with doing number ones and rebooting all of DC is that for all the new people that came in, which is fantastic, I'm not knocking that, a lot of it reminds me of the death of Superman, Batman breaking his bat, the worst of the 90s. That is to say, as one very smart person has kept on saying, if 1% of the people who check these comics out stick around, that's still a huge gain for the industry, and that's fantastic. But what I'd like to see is creativity, solid writing that making news. The fact that these people, that $1.2, $1.3 million have been raised on Kickstarter for independence comic books is not being talked about. There are solid comics being pitched all the time that aren't making news. Instead, the focus is on gimmicks and the death of the character and the series being rebooted when it should be what else is good. Rachel Rising number 2, Rachel Rising, Terry Moore, great series, saw very little coverage of it. That needs to be focused on more. I'm just trying to think of just the fantastic series that I've read, like more and more independence. It's really been where I've been focused, and I'm glad I've been focused on that. Don't get me wrong. I mean, DC, I think, did well, but there is something wrong where that's what makes news and that's what gets the industry going, as opposed to solid storytelling that word of mouth drives the sales, as opposed to gimmicky reboots and deaths of characters. But that's my thought of that. If folks want to call in, number 619-768-2952. We've got about 9 minutes left in the show, though I might call out early if folks don't call in. It's been an interesting, I think, summer and year. It's been up and down. A lot of people, I think, were nervous over what DC was doing. It seems to have played off for the long run. But really what's selling now is a bubble. Talk to me April of next year, and we'll see how things are doing. That's going to be the really test, is how many stick around in the long run, not what's being done in the short run. We're in a bubble. The fact that DC won September as far as sales is not a shocker. It's expected. What's DC going to be doing in November, December, January, February? That's the key. Can they keep the momentum up? Can they keep the excitement going? So this person argues that DC is doing is more compressed storytelling. That's what's needed. New starting points, issue number ones, aren't the gimmick. Absolutely agree. The fact that people are writing to 5-issue trades it bothers me. It's the one thing that got me with Ultimate Spider-Man. The first, second issue are good and they're solid stories, but I find fascinating that we're hardly through the origin tale. It's 2 issues. Stanley was able to do it in 1 issue. Whether or not it's compressed storytelling, I'm not quite sure on that. Compressed to me means, you know, one-shot issues, maybe 1 or 2 issues. So far, what I've read is stories that are going to still be going on for the trade. So I don't know if it's necessarily compressed storytelling. I would say maybe it's more open storytelling as to what's DC achieving, where more people can access it and start reading from scratch and get rid of the continuity that a lot of the comic series are bogged down on. And that's good, and that's needed. I don't think that was necessarily needed with a bunch of number ones. That is a style of writing. This is one thing that we have numerous discussions with the guys with Top Cow with, and Ron Mars, and I keep coming back to him because I think he's a very smart guy. He says that writing, you know, it should be open to anyone. You should be able to pick up a comic. It might be part 2 of 4 and still get what's going on and still be able to read it. That's what a major failure in the industry has been in for such a long time, is the fact that that hasn't been the case, that you haven't been able to pick up the part 2s, the part 3s, and part 4s and still enjoy it as if you're reading the part 1s. There's been too much continuity. The writing's been too jumbled. And it is what it is, and that's what's DC seems to be getting away from a bit, but we'll see. I mean, already there's references in Animal Man that play into Swamp Thing, Swamp Thing that plays over Animal Man. Do you need to read one to understand the other? No, not necessarily. If you read both, is it a better storyline? Absolutely. But you can see habits flowing back, which gets me a bit nervous. But it's solid storytelling. I mean, it's the difference. That's what was going on before, what's going on now. I think some of the best
writing that's going on with DC with this reboot are the B-list characters, Animal Man, Resurrection Man, Swamp Thing, Voodoo, iZombie. All those are the ones that kind of stood out to me. It wasn't Batman, Superman, Green Lantern. I mean, those were good, but it's the rest, I think, were excellent to me when it comes to the A-lister, if you want to call him an A-lister, was Aquaman. Aquaman was absolutely fantastic first issue. That got me to care about a character that I've never liked before, so it's a solid thing. But let's see here. What else do we have? Talked about some of the recent trade paperbacks I've read. Yeah, I think that's a good wrapping point for this show. Apologize for rambling on for almost 55 minutes. I think next week, hopefully, we'll be back to normal. I'm not quite sure. It is New York Comic Con. We'll be wandering around, both myself and Alana will be attending the show. Look forward to it. It's a fantastic show. Hopefully come out with some interviews, some great stuff to read, some great stuff to review, make a lot of friends and catch up with a lot of old friends. It's always the reason to go to these shows. So yeah, that's it. Thanks for listening, and talk to you. Hopefully you tune in next week.